You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and it being Friday in the first hour of our program, it is the Brunch with Bernie hour, or Lunch with Bernie, or Tea with Bernie. Bernie, what? Senator Sanders, welcome.
Whatever it may be. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, I am great. I hope you are well.
We are hanging in.
Okay, and you're over there in the Senate recording studios. So I noticed that the Senate just passed the debt ceiling bill back to the House, and there's a lot of other stuff I'm sure going on. So what's on your mind today?
All right, let me try to, you know, people are looking at the front pages of the papers or they're watching TV. I think there's probably a lot of confusion as to what is going on in this dysfunctional world here in Washington, D.C. So let me try to briefly tell you what, try to explain it. The fiscal year ends at the end of this month, and that's Monday. And what Republicans are trying to do is to say that they will shut down the government, not fund it for the next year, unless, among many other things, we defund the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Now, it seems to me, and I say this, Tom, as an advocate of a Medicare for All single-payer system, we can have a lot of more discussion about how you improve Obamacare, how you deal with the fact that 28 million Americans will still remain uninsured, how you deal with the tax on strong health care plans that union workers have fought for, and other problems within the Obamacare program. But what you do not do, it seems to me, is shut down the federal government. Tell the men and women who are in Afghanistan or around the world defending this nation that, sorry, you may not get a paycheck. You don't tell the police officers here or defending the nation's capital, well, you may not get a paycheck. You don't tell moms who today are walking their kids into a Head Start program, well, we're sorry because we are insistent on defunding the Affordable Care Act. We may have to shut down your Head Start center. Or we may have to shut down and eliminate the Meals on Wheels program for low-income senior citizens or the WIC program for women, pregnant women and children or furlough people who are on the FBI. That is not what you do. And the ugliness of what's going on now is that in terms of the Affordable Care Act, it was passed 3 years ago by the Congress, signed by the president. Republicans took it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled it constitutional. We had an election, and Republicans lost seats in the Senate. They lost seats in the House, and President Obama won a huge victory. And one of the central issues of the campaign was the Affordable Care Act. So what Republicans are saying, we don't care about all of that. We now have the power, and we're going to use the power to try to eliminate funding for the Affordable Care Act, and we really don't care what the implications of that. And then on top of that, I know this gets confusing here, in a few more weeks, in mid-October, the United States government will run out of money to pay its debts. We have a lot of obligations, and it would be incomprehensible for the first time in the history of the United States of America, that the faith and credit of the United States government was destroyed, that we became a deadbeat nation, and that we refused to pay the bills to the people we owe. Now, nobody knows what that would mean, but what many economists are saying is if the most powerful economy in the world refuses to, is unable to pay its bills, this will, at the very least, lead to higher interest rates, very serious pressure on the international financial community, certainly a reduction in the GDP, many lost jobs. That's at the best. The worst case could be a lot worse than that, because when you are the largest economy in the world and you don't pay back money to people that you owe money, it creates an unbelievable moment of uncertainty around the entire world. So that's what our Republican friends are saying. Rather than arguing their points of view, trying to get the changes, at least having a debate, where they are essentially for the first time really prepared to hold hostage the American economy, millions of working people, federal employees who may not get a paycheck, vulnerable people who benefit from federal programs. I mean, if this government is shut down, what you will find is people will, we think, get their Social Security checks. But if you're applying for Social Security, your claims will be processed much slower. We're not going to have workers to process the claims. If you're applying for veterans benefits, claims will be processed much slower. If you're applying for small business grants, those will be processed much slower. So it will be a real setback for the economy and millions of people. That's issue number one. I think the second point to be made, and that needs to be explained to many people, is that this fight against the Affordable Care Act, not Obamacare, is just a small example of what these right-wing extremists stand for. Senator Cruz, who was on the floor for 21 hours the other day, I obviously did not agree with much of what he said, but he said one thing that I did agree with, and he said, we need a real debate about the fundamental issues facing this country, and he's quite right. As part of that debate, we need to know where folks like Senator Cruz are really coming from. And as I pointed out last week, if people go, just get on the website, go to the Texas Republican state platform, which is, you know, the platform of maybe the most powerful Republican state in this country, which has a huge impact on Republicans all over America, find out what they stand for and what they stand for. And they spell it out. This is not Bernie Sanders telling you. This is what is in their platform. They stand for the repeal of Social Security. They want to do away with Social Security. They want to privatize veterans' health care. And many veterans, the 6 million veterans who utilize VA health care, will be very surprised to find out that the Republicans want to end that, voucherize that program. They want to abolish the minimum wage. They want to repeal the minimum wage. I want you to stop and think about it. We got millions of people in this country who are working for horrendously low wages. Minimum wage federally is 7 1/4. You got people working 8, 9, 10 bucks an hour. What I believe we need to do is substantially raise the minimum wage to a living wage. These guys do not only not want to raise the minimum wage, they want to abolish it. And what they want to do is have a situation where there's a high unemployment area, where workers are desperate for jobs, and you'll have employers saying, I'm going to offer you $4 an hour. I'm going to offer you $3 an hour. You could take it or leave it, but that's all you're getting. And in the midst of all of this stuff, doing away with Social Security, voucherizing Medicare, cutting Medicaid, privatizing the Veterans Administration, doing away with minimum wage, they do this under the name of quote-unquote freedom, you see? So if your kid, if you're sitting somewhere in Texas and your child gets sick and seriously ill and you don't have any health insurance, you're free. You're really free because the federal government is not there. And if you're working for $3 an hour, you're really free because the federal government doesn't have a minimum wage. And if you're living in a community where a corporation is dumping crap into your lake or to your rivers or polluting the air, and we got rid of the EPA, which is what these guys want to do, well, you're free now to breathe all that crap and get sick because you don't have that terrible government hanging around you. So I think this is a debate that needs to be had. And I think when people understand what right-wing extremism is about, they will reject it.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. He'll be taking your calls right after this break in our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. It's one of the most informative of all the Senate websites out there. And a lot of ways you can get involved, actually, through that website, sanders.senate.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, there's TomHartman.com, too. You can drop into our live chat room and say hello. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Bernie right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And Carol in Apache Junction, Arizona, you are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you both. Since I have to rephrase this in terms of a question, would you please keep remembering people like me as far as no Republican budget, no Republican budget cuts, no trying to eliminate the EPA and interfering with HHS. And even though I'm on Medicare and wouldn't benefit from it, a lot of people will. No defunding Obamacare and no shutting down the government on October 17th.
Carol, thank you very much. The government may be shut down earlier than October 17th. I think what you're referring to is what's even a worse crisis, and that is not paying our debts and what that will mean to the American economy and the world economy. But I want to reiterate one thing. What all of the economists understand is that in a very, very fragile American economy and a fragile global economy, if the government of the United States shuts down, if the United States does not pay their bills, there is nobody who does not believe this is going to reduce the gross domestic product. It is going to cost us many, many, many jobs above and beyond the federal employees who are going to be unfairly attacked on this. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, about people all over this country today, federal employees, people in federal programs, through no fault of their own. Those programs may be shut down for a shorter or longer period of time. Employees may not receive their paychecks for a longer or shorter period of time, or they may not ever. I think some of our Republican friends think we should never pay these guys when they're not at work. So there's a lot of pain that they're talking about because they're in the process of hijacking the government rather than dealing with these issues in a normal manner.
Loretta in Waldboro, Maine. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hi, Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I want to know, I'd like to ask you if you know what is going on in the state of Maine with Governor Page and what he is doing. He has taken away our property tax rebate that we're entitled to since the property taxes are so high. When I got I get $822 a month last year, Social Security. They raised it to $836 this year. Before I even had a penny of it in December, he took the $14 away from the food stamps. We are, the elderly and families with children and the disabled are suffering terribly. And if something isn't done to stop this man, people are going to be dying. I called and wanted to start an impeachment against him and was told that the state does not have impeachment. What can we do to get help?
Well, Loretta, you're going to have an election fairly soon. Look, whether it's the governor of Maine or many of my colleagues here in the Senate or many members of the House of Representatives, Loretta, what these people are about are right-wing extremism. They receive most of their money from billionaire families like the Koch brothers, who have poured over $200 million into Tea Party-type organizations. Their goal in life is to repeal every significant piece of legislation passed in the last 80 years that protects the interest of the middle class, working families, lower-income people, or the elderly. That's what they want. And meanwhile, what they want to do is then lower taxes for the richest people in this country and the largest corporations. That is their agenda. It's not just the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. That's just nickel and dime. Their agenda is to create a situation where a handful of billionaires can control the economic and political life of this nation, pay virtually nothing in taxes, while the vast majority of the people will be struggling just to keep their heads above water economically. What you're seeing in Maine under your governor is taking place throughout this country. Can you imagine that there are states like Texas and elsewhere? And in fact, in Texas, Texas has the highest percentage of uninsured Americans of any state in the country, about one out of four Texans uninsured. The Affordable Care Act says we're going to provide health insurance for many of those people. And the governor is saying, no, no. So what you have is millionaires and billionaires have more money than they know what to do with, have great health care, great retirement programs, great housing, great education for their kids. But when it comes to the needs of working families or lower income people, they want to cut, cut, cut. That is the world that we're living in. That is what's going on in Maine. That is what's going on in many parts of this country. And we have got to organize effectively, bring people together to say, no, that is not what the United States of America is about.
Wayne in Bushnell, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Wayne?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You're on the air, Wayne.
All right. Hey, what? Bernie. Just listening to some of this stuff about the Koch brothers.
Wayne, turn on, okay. Don't listen to your TV. There's a delay. Just talk on the phone.
Okay.
We got a minute here.
Okay. On them, how...
Okay, Wayne, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll pick up your call in a minute. But, Bernie, we have only about 40 seconds.
You want to
know how the Koch brothers get away with, you know, funding these right-wingers.
Look, here's what you got, and everybody should understand this. The Koch brothers, two brothers, are worth $70 billion, $70 billion. It's an unbelievable sum of money. So for these guys to put $1 billion or $500 million into the political process, into starting Tea Party organizations or anti-climate change organizations or anti-progressive taxation organizations, it's nickels and dimes for them. And that's what they are doing, and that's why, among many other things, we have to overturn Citizens United Supreme Court decision.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, first hour Friday. We'll be back with more of our national town hall meeting. Bernie taking your calls right after this. It's 27-28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov, G-O-V. Welcome back. 27 minutes before, 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, actually over in the Senate studios, and taking your calls. And Al in Rome, Wisconsin. Al, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Okay, Bernie, I got a couple of quick ones. One, what the hell happened to travel pay? Two, why wasn't VA included in ACA?
Okay. Al, on your first one, here's what is going on, and we're trying to change it. And talk to your local VA about this, because I think we have changed it. What Al is talking about is that the VA has said that if veterans can get their health care in a community-based outreach clinic closer to them, rather than going to their medical center, they're only going to pay for local travel. We worked on that, Al, and I think what the VA is in the process of changing is if you have a doctor that you want to continue seeing at the medical center, somebody you've seen in the past, have confidence in, you will be able to continue seeing that doctor and get your travel pay there. For newer veterans, they're probably just going to pay to get to the local VA. Second of all, you raise an interesting question that I and my staff are working on right now. What Al is talking about, if a veteran out there does not have any health insurance now, could they get into an exchange, a VA exchange, getting the VA up there as an option? And that is an interesting issue and one we're taking a look at right now. I think it makes sense.
Okay. Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, thanks to each of you for all the good work you do. Appreciate you both.
Thank you.
My question today, I want to frame this up, and I have to say, given that we do not agree with the current paradigm with how cannabis is viewed, I'd like the Democrats and you, Bernie, to clarify, are you for ending cannabis prohibition so that farmers and gardeners can grow this plant as hemp or marijuana, or do you favor prohibition continuing on the cannabis plant because of trade agreements that the United States has with other nations. Could you be clear about that? Because most Americans, when they're really listening to the issue of prohibition on cannabis and when they're reading the research that's available now that we can read, it's quite obvious.
Bob, let's get Bernie's answer here.
Helpful.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. From my perception, Bob, my views have nothing to do with these trade agreements, which I believe I have opposed virtually every major trade agreement that's come down the pike. So that is not my concern. I can tell you that in Vermont and in many other states around the country, there is growing concern and some action. I think in Colorado and elsewhere about decriminalizing the growing of small amounts of marijuana and selling them legally. So I think you're seeing that trend, and I support that trend. The second issue is that you're seeing many states understand that the quote-unquote war on drugs has been extremely harmful to a whole lot of people who were never involved in any violent activity but end up in jail. Their lives get significantly destroyed, and it ends up costing the government a whole lot of money to keep these people in jail. So I think there's a lot of discussion about moving to decriminalize marijuana and also to grow hemp.
Okay. Randy in Gardnerville, Nevada. You're on the air, Nevada. Tell me how to say it, Randy. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Nevada is right. Yeah.
Thank you.
yes, Senator. If these folks are successful in their efforts, will you guys be getting paid? Will you draw your salary?
Well, interesting. The answer is yes. And the answer is yes because that is what the Constitution of the United States mandates, Randy. And the reason for that is pretty obvious. If you ever have a situation where members of Congress would not get paid unless they did this or that, you would have a very bad situation. But I think, Randy, and I've heard that question a couple of times, and I think if the argument is it fair that members of Congress get paid when members of the armed forces do not? No, it's not. But the answer is that you should pay members of the armed forces. You should pay Head Start workers. You should not be shutting down the government. Don't get involved in this game of this group versus this group. The issue is that what the Republicans are doing is extraordinarily dangerous for this country. When people work, we pay them. You don't shut down the government and cause pain for large numbers of people. In terms of members of Congress, based on the Constitution, we get paid, and that's that.
Kathy in Pleasant Grove, Utah. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
I'm Kathy from Lee Summit, Missouri.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Senator Sanders, I have read two articles recently about using the post office as a publicly owned network of banks, as we did from 1911 to 1967, to help the banking of the underinsured and the non-bank or non-underbanked and the non-banked. And then using the proceeds to not only build up the post office again, but as a national infrastructure bank. I know it sounds like a very hard lift, but I was just wondering if you'd ever even heard of this. Apparently, the president for National Letter Carriers brought it up. And I
Kathy,
wondering if
yes, the answer is
possible.
The answer is I have heard of it. I think it is an idea that should be looked at. Given the political climate today when we have most Republicans who really want to privatize the post office. They want to cut back on on rural post offices. They want to cut back on mail delivery and processing plants. They want to end Saturday mail. They want to shrink the post office by about 100,000 workers. Probably that's not going to happen tomorrow. But I just want to say in terms of the post office, Tom, because I think a lot of your listeners are interested in it, the major problem financially with the post office is this onerous $5.5 billion burden that they have to pay every single year for future health care, for future retiree health care. And no other entity in the United States in the private sector or the public sector pays anything near that. They just don't have to pay that. If you got rid of that burden alone, that $5.5 billion, I suspect the post office would be profitable right now or close to profitable. And I've introduced legislation that, among many other things, does that. It also Kathy, puts together a blue ribbon commission to look at new ways for the Postal Service to be more flexible and to raise revenue. And this is an idea that certainly should be discussed by that commission. Bottom line is we've got to save the post office. You don't do that by shrinking it and cutting back 100,000 jobs. You don't do that by shutting down rural post offices or mail processing plants and lowering delivery standards. You do that by making the Postal Service a dynamic entity in the 21st century, given the flexibility to make money. So we're working hard on that issue.
Larry in Las Vegas, Nevada. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Is it Larry?
Larry, yep. You're on the air, Larry.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hello, Senator Sanders. I would like to ask you about the Medicaid program and why each state is allowed to administer it as they see fit. I just got back today from a doctor and had to have a biopsy of a growth. And for three months, I've been trying to get a cream, but they will not pay for it at the pharmacy. And I'm wondering if possibly that cream might have kept this growth from coming up. And I want to know if there could be any way they could make it like Medicare, where every state has to administer the same program, the same specified benefits, and not, just take it from one word, Republican-dominated Tea Party nuts out here everywhere. And they're not going to pay for anything they don't have to. They just want to shake every dollar out of you and tell you to get out of the state like they've done with busing the mental people to California.
Well, Larry, boy, you have raised a whole lot of good issues. The short answer to your question is, unlike Medicare, Larry is contrasting Medicare with Medicaid. Medicare is a federal program. Same program exists in Vermont as it does, same set of benefits exist in Vermont as it does in Nevada, all 50 states, federal program. Medicaid is a federal state program. Federal government, roughly speaking, puts it about 60%. States, roughly speaking, put it about 40%. But states have the power to decide, as Larry indicated, whether they're going to do more or less in terms of health care or, in fact, in terms of dental care. Larry touches on a very interesting point, and I hope people heard him. What is going on in the country today is that people who do not have access to good primary care are unable to get the diagnoses they need when they need it, often end up in a situation where they walk into the doctor's office and the problem is much more serious than it should have been if they had that diagnosis or treatment earlier. We are losing, according to a Harvard study of a few years ago, about 45,000 Americans every year, because by the time they go into the doctor, they are already in very bad shape. So Larry raises some very important questions.
We'll be back with more of our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Hartman program in just a moment. Be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. Stick around. 15-minute test, or before that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And over at Bernie's website, you can also sign up for the Bernie Buzz for his newsletter, which is a great news source. It's at sanders.senate.gov. Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program. Senator Sanders answering your questions. And Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon, Sanders. Two things. One, there's no ad or any kind of announcement here of when you're coming to speak in Alabama. We suffered from 6 weeks of O'Reilly ads, but we haven't heard anything about your tour. Secondly, do any of these people realize that when they eliminate the minimum wage, here people who work for minimum wage are bringing home $240 average a week? They can rent a shack for $300 a month. Their basic power energy bill will run them $200 a month. This does not leave anything for transportation, insurance, which is mandatory, gas to put in the car to go earn the minimum wage hour, or money for food. So they're all on Medicare, SNAP, aid to dependent children, and the WIC program. where do they expect these people to go or live without a minimum wage?
Let me answer both of your questions. Norma, we will do a better job. I'm going to be in mid-October going through Jackson, Mississippi. I think we're going to be in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm going to Atlanta, Georgia, and we'll be in Columbia, South Carolina. And the reason I am making that tour is I believe that in those states, and I think in every state of this country, the vast majority of the people are working people, are middle-class people. And I worry that in the Deep South and other parts of this country, people are not hearing a progressive message. All they hear over and over again is a right-wing extremist point of view. And I think that I and other people have got to get into these so-called red states and start talking about issues that make sense to working families. So I promise you, Norma, we'll get the word out better than we are, but I am going to be in Birmingham, Alabama. Second of all, your point about the minimum wage is exactly right. All you have to do is the arithmetic. If somebody is making 7 1/4, if they are lucky enough to get 40 hours of work, and many of the employers in the fast food industry do not hire people for 40 hours a week, hire them for less, and other companies do the same. You just do the arithmetic. If somebody is living on $16,000, $18,000 a year, you know, $7 an hour is $400 a week, 50 weeks, that's $20,000 a year. If you got to eat, if you need a car to get to work, if you need to have car insurance, if you want to pay rent or pay a mortgage, if, God forbid, you need to go to the doctor, you just do the arithmetic and it does not add up. So you got millions of people who are working one job, two jobs at low wages, and they're falling behind. There was a story, I think, in the New York Times, woman working two jobs in New York City living in a homeless shelter. I can tell you that in Vermont, you have working people who are going to emergency food shelves. The arithmetic doesn't add up. People cannot survive and certainly cannot bring up a family on $8 or $9 an hour. So Norma's point is exactly right. That is why we have to raise the minimum wage, in my view, to a minimum of $10 an hour.
Okay. Dan in San Diego. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I have a question on Affordable Care Act and other subsidies such as lifelines for utilities, the basis for, AGI. The basis is your AGI. Now, let's say if you were withdrawing early from an IRA, that's what your AGI would consist of.
Your adjusted gross income.
You don't really have any income. And if you had like a big bill, say your car died or something like that, that boosts your, what's reported as income even higher to where you wouldn't qualify for subsidy. And I was wondering, shouldn't there be other adjustments allowed to AGI that would, make you more qualified? Because you're not really, let's say you're long-term unemployed, you're not really earning any income.
Right. I think, Dan, you raise a fair point. And as our Republican friends criticize the Affordable Care Act, I mean, one of the things that we're going to have to do is see how things play out, where there are problems, and there are problems. There's no question about it. And see how we can improve it. It's a complicated bill. We're going to see how things play out, and where there are weaknesses, we go back and we improve it. But one thing we do not do is bring down the United States government, shut down the United States government because of this issue. So, Dan, thank you. I think you make a good point.
Kathy in Valparaiso, Indiana, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. We have 2 minutes to the end of the hour.
Oh, good afternoon, Tom and Senator Sanders. I'm calling. I want to make 3 points.
Please,
what
very
I'm
quickly.
Seeing here in Indiana, this is insidious, what the government, the Republicans are wanting to do in the government. And my 3 points are that they'll cause people to die because of lack of care, lack of food. It'll cause suicides more than there already is because of the economy. Their pattern, I think, is trying to cause a war in this country with poverty, racism, ageism. And now with insurance and the gun association, if you think about it, these are all things that get people all fired up and angry. And the third is now with the insurance, if you're lucky to have it, and I find this in my own family, I'm considered one of the 1%.
Kathy, we have just a minute left.
Okay, let me answer Kathy.
Let's not burn the riff on this.
All right, Kathy makes, you know, a similar point that Norma made a moment ago. This attack against working families and lower-income people, Kathy says it's going to cause people to die. Of course it will. Of course it will. If people cannot get health insurance and get to the doctor when they should, they're going to die a lot earlier than they should. There will be treatable diseases that will not be treated. There's no question about that. If people can't get unemployment, decent unemployment insurance when they lose their job, if people can't get food stamps, if people can't live with a shred of dignity, will more people under that type of pressure see suicide as an answer? I think the evidence is that they will. So we are living right now in a very, very difficult economic moment for tens of millions of Americans. The role of the United States government should be to improve life, to provide more security, more help, not to make things worse, which is what the Republican agenda is.
Bernie, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
And this week. It's really appreciated. And be sure to check out, for all of you watching, be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back. Kwame Nehdu, the International Executive Director of Greenpeace, will be with us in our third hour. Next hour, up, Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here. Welcome to the show. A lot of news, a lot going on, and I've got to play this scene. Incredible ad for you in just a moment. But I also wanted to let you know that OptimaTaxRelief.com are one of the underwriters of our program for people facing back taxes, IRS liens, bank levies. More information is available at OptimaTaxRelief.com. Now, that said, Free Speech TV is having their fund drive right now. And if you are listening on one of our Pacifica affiliates as well, they are, many of them are also in their fund drives. I know KBCS, I believe, in the Seattle area is, and others. Please, when you hear their phone numbers on the air, give them a call and support what they're doing. It's really important to support independent media. And, our show, for example, we get some of our support from some of our underwriters, but typically the radio stations and the television networks don't. And they depend entirely on you, on your support. So please call Free Speech TV or please call your local Pacifica radio station if that's how you're listening to the program and let them know that you support what they're doing, because it's really important stuff to have independent, progressive media. So... that said, the Democrats, I believe this is the Democratic Party came out with this. You gotta see and listen to this ad. This is absolutely incredible. I mean, this is what is going on. Just got a network error message on my call screen software. FYI, this is going on. This is what is going on. It speaks for itself. Just listen to this. This is the ad.
American people, this is the GOP. We have your economy. If you ever want your economy back, do exactly as we say. We have over 25 very specific demands and are adding more as we speak. To start, end Obamacare. And while we're at it, let's gut Wall Street reform too. We demand you halt energy regulations, slash taxes for the rich while raising them on the middle class, and start construction of the Keystone Pipeline, like tomorrow. You know what? Why don't you just reverse the results of the 2012 presidential election? If our demands are not met, we'll simply stop paying our nation's bills, destroying our credibility and destabilizing the world's economy. Clock's ticking. We hope you don't make us do this.
Paid for by the Democratic National Committee, I guess. I think that's what it said at the very end there. Isn't that hysterical? I mean, this is what the Republicans are doing. is they are it's hostage taking. There's no other way to describe it. It's hostage taking. It's mind-boggling when you think about it that the Republicans would be doing a hostage taking. But so anyhow, here's the latest update after Ted Cruz's 21-hour speech. And the all the huffing and puffing, Ted Cruz joined all the other senators in voting to bring the bill to fund the government to the floor for discussion and debate. And an amendment was proposed that would strip out of it, out of the House version in the Senate, it would strip out of it the language that defunded Obamacare. And that passed with a majority vote. All Democrats. Well, I don't know. There might have been some Republicans. I don't have the vote count on that, but it passed. And Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, sort of the Senate equivalent of the Speaker of the House, sent it back to the House. So tell me when I can open the software back up again, please. Shane, tell me when I can open the software again. Okay, thank you. So anyway, a very delicate balancing act is going on. I mean, this is really tricky. You've got John Boehner in the House of Representatives, arguably one of the weakest speakers of the House in modern history. And if you read Bob Ney's book, Sideswiped, which is an absolutely brilliant insider account. Bob Ney was a Republican congressman from Ohio, right, which is where John Boehner's from. And he went to prison because of his association with a bunch of these crimes. But he lays out in his book actually how John Boehner broke the law. He accuses John Boehner of breaking the law and points out that, you know, John Boehner is like literally, you know, the weakest speaker we've ever seen. So, you know, the question, what's Boehner going to do? Because he's got the Koch brothers. He now has a primary challenger in his own state of Ohio. He's up for re-election next year, as is every single member of the House of Representatives. The Koch brothers and the right-wing billionaires are funding Tea Party candidates against these so-called moderate Republicans, who are pretty extremist to begin with. And so Boehner now has a choice. He can say, okay, we'll take this bill from the Senate and we'll pass it and send it to the president, who will sign it, and the country will not, or the government won't shut down. Or he can let the Tea Party amend it and send it back to the Senate and watch the thing die and watch the government freeze up, which is what happened back when Newt was the speaker. And it will cost America a lot of money, it will hurt America, and it will accomplish nothing. They're not going to get what they want. They're not going to get their demands met. They're not going to get taxes cut on billionaires. They're not going to get taxes raised on working-class people. They're not going to get the president tomorrow morning to say, let's run a pipeline from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico so that the Canadian corporation can refine their dirty oil down in Texas. We get the pollution, and they can ship the gasoline and diesel fuel off to China and England. And they're not going to get the EPA regulations rolled back so that the Koch brothers and other refiners and people in the oil business and whatnot can make more money while we get more cancers. It ain't going to happen. Right? The Democrats in the House aren't going to let it happen, and even if they did, the president wouldn't sign it. So, are we going to see political suicide? I don't know. Mike in Clarksville, Tennessee. Hey, Mike, anything goes Friday. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just thinking, who is the president negotiating with, the Republican leadership or their campaign contributors?
Well, that's why he's refusing to negotiate, because it's the campaign contributors. You know, I forget which publication it was, but they're saying now, you know, the most powerful guy in Washington, D.C. is Jim DeMint, who's not even in the Senate anymore. He's making $2 million a year running the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I don't know about Boehner, but there's a similarity between him and George Bush. I think they're problem drinkers.
Oh, but yeah, Bob Ney lays that out in his book. John Boehner is a high-functioning alcoholic. He is drunk every day.
Yeah, now I know that the Constitution protects against alcoholics being discriminated against, but if you're a politician with this much power,
Yeah.
It's trouble.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think that there's a serious problem here that, you know, every single night John Boehner is drunk by the end of the night, and sometimes it starts in the middle of the day, according to the people around him. And this is, you know, basically no way to run a government. So, time? Yeah, so it's I'm with you, Mike. Yeah. We'll pick up more of your calls right after this. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. 15 minutes past the hour. Stick around, we'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and did I mention that Kwame Nehdu, the International Executive Director of Greenpeace, will be with us for the third hour of our program. Huge rally outside the Senate for Ted Cruz right now, Gustav Mahler says in our chat room. Picks over at Twitter. Oh, no. This guy has such a grandstander. It is incredible. Andrew in Ashland, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andrew, what's on your mind?
Hey, Andrew. I thank you again for the program. A lot of information always.
Andrew, I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you able to hear me now?
Yeah. So you need to speak just a little louder.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So what's up?
I was saying, since the program always gives a lot of info. So I had a question about, we talked about it maybe a couple of weeks ago. The Saudis and the Qataris now are sponsoring all these terrorist rebels in Syria. They are like mostly now 80% of the resistance or the rebels is Al-Qaeda type, jihadist, you know, radical Islamist. And they're committing war crimes according to the UN and Amnesty International and so forth. And the question is, how does the International Criminal Court work in this case? Who brings charges against whom? You know, and if the country is not...
My understanding, first of all, Andrew, I don't know. I can't vouch for the veracity of your 80% number, although it wouldn't surprise me if it's accurate. But I just don't know. But with regard to the International Criminal Court at The Hague, they can go after non-state actors and, in fact, frequently have people who are not operating, you know, from the capacity of a government position, and indict them. The question is, you know, identifying these people, and so many of these, as you correctly point out, so this is the new jihadi training ground, and it's one of the reasons why I think it was a big mistake that the United States got involved in it. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But beyond knowing that the International Criminal Court can go against anybody, I don't know enough about the procedures involved. We probably should get somebody on, like, you know, maybe Michael Ratner, who knows this stuff, to talk about the issue. It's a good one. I'm sorry I'm not the expert here. Bob in Carson City, Nevada. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Friday, I had the question of, I seem to recall in the 80s that John Boehner, when he was the Secretary of Arms of the House, passing out checks from cigarette companies to members of the Congress that voted to protect cigarette companies.
That's correct.
I wonder if why that is not being shown. And a second question is, why doesn't the president declare these people traitors, like David Koch and Donald Koch, and declare them enemies of the state?
Well, A, they're not traitors or enemies of the state. I think that, you know, using that word, and Bob, thanks for the call, I think using that word that casually diminishes its value, because there are people who actually are traitors, people who actually are giving aid and comfort to the enemy during time of war. These are people who have a very different vision of America. They have a vision of America in which, you know, poor people are on their own. There's a large class of the working poor, you know, weren't born rich, weren't a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, tough on you, that sort of thing. And, you know, they just have a different vision of America than the vision, frankly, that most Americans have, which is that we're all in this together and that America, you know, America is for Americans. You know, it's putting America first and building America, American jobs for American people, American-made things. So I don't, as much as I dislike their politics and even the way that they throw their money around, I would not call them traitors. So, and then, and why is John Boehner passing out cigarette checks not from back in the 80s not being brought up? There's that. There's a number of, actually, as I said, Bob Ney in his book Sideswiped lays out a number of actual crimes that John Boehner committed. The networks will not be discussing these things because they want him to come on their networks. You can't run a network television program if the Republicans refuse to come on. And so they basically don't talk about the Republican crimes or Republican criminals because they know that they'll be boycotted. And if they're boycotted, then they go out of business. And this is true at the level of the individual talk show hosts, and it's true at the level of the shows and their show producers, and it's true at the level of the networks. And it's wrong and it's unfortunate, but that's what's going on. Harvey in Berkeley, you wanted to talk about the IPCC?
Yes, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Mm-hmm. Well, today they said that that we are responsible since the 1950s of 95%, they figure 95% responsible for creating global warming. And this means that it's gloves off for the coal, the oil, the natural gas, and the nuclear industry. They're going to fight tooth and nail, and they're going to do everything they can to discredit this group. One thing that's interesting, and there was an article I opened up here, it says spraying nano-sized titanium dioxide into the atmosphere to combat global warming. If you go to Google and put in the words titanium dioxide and climate change and upper atmosphere, these articles come up. And what they want to do is spray this thin layer into the upper atmosphere, billions of tons of titanium dioxide, the titanium dioxide is the white in white paint. Right. And supposedly it'll reflect sunlight. But by doing that, what they're doing, essentially by putting sunscreen on the planet, is they'll reduce solar efficiency and we'll need more coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear to make up for the reduced solar. So instead of stopping coal, oil, natural gas and slowing down global warming, that's their answer. Carbon right. dioxide, a thin layer of carbon dioxide in the upper atmosphere.
Titanium dioxide, yeah. This is called geoengineering, and I have a real problem with it because the basic thinking behind geoengineering is that our planet is a machine, and we can fix this machine or we can fix the damage that we did to it. Our planet is not a machine. It's a living organism, and it has to be healed. And part of that healing is you stop poisoning it. We are poisoning our planet with carbon dioxide. We have seen our planet go through these carbon dioxide poisonings 5 times in the deep geologic past. They're referred to as mass extinctions. And if we continue down this course that we're on right now, the IPCC came out and fairly unambiguously said that by the year 2040, at the current rate, we will have burned a trillion tons of carbon into the atmosphere. And that's a major, major point of no return.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We got to get off this carbon thing right away. Seriously. Welcome back, Tom Hartman. Here with you. Anything Goes Friday. And Bill in St. Helens, Oregon. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Tom, this what's going on in the House, both Republicans, strikes me as a form of economic terrorism. It's like they're holding a gun to the American people's head and saying, you're not going to get your Social Security, veterans aren't going to get their pensions. Basically give me my way or I'm going to shoot the public. I'm going to shoot the common good.
Yeah, did you see or hear the ad that we ran at the beginning of the hour, the new Democratic ad?
I think I missed it.
Oh, it's just, let me play this for you, Bill. It's just a minute long, and probably a lot of people have tuned in since we first played it. Jim, you've got it queued up. You can play this thing? Okay, here it is. This the DNC just released this.
American people, this is the GOP. We have your economy. If you ever want your economy back, do exactly as we say. We have over 25 very specific demands and are adding more as we speak. To start, end Obamacare. And while we're at it, let's gut Wall Street reform too. We demand you halt energy regulations, slash taxes for the rich while raising them on the middle class, and start construction of the Keystone Pipeline, like tomorrow. You know what? Why don't you just reverse the results of the 2012 presidential election? If our demands are not met, we'll simply stop paying our nation's bills, destroying our credibility and destabilizing the world's economy. Clock's ticking. We hope you don't make us do this.
There you go. So Bill, that's that. What do you think?
One of the things I did do is I called my representative, Suzanne Bonamici. I understand she probably can't, but I strongly suggested she start censorship or impeachment proceedings against those who feel free to violate the Constitution, the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
They are constitutional criminals. I think the House and the Senate should hold their people accountable, and I think in this case the House should hold its people accountable.
Yeah. In terms of shutting down the government, that's not a violation of the 14th Amendment, but in terms of not lifting the debt ceiling, that is a violation of the 14th Amendment. We haven't, you know, haven't started that battle yet. That's the next one. But I'm with you, Bill. I think that impeachment, I think if the tables were turned, if the Democrats were the minority, if the Democrats were the minority and the Republicans were in power, and the Republicans and the Democrats were threatening to bring down the government, I guarantee, and the Republicans ran the government, I guarantee you they would be starting impeachment hearings tomorrow morning against the Democratic leaders. There's no doubt in my mind. They look at what they did to Bill Clinton. They've been trying to figure out a way to impeach President Obama ever since he came in. Daryl Issa is on all, you know, witch hunt after witch hunt after witch hunt. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. Bill, thank you. Portia in Maple Valley, Washington. Am I saying that right? Or is it Portia?
Portia.
Portia. Hi.
Yeah. I appreciate your show and glad we get a chance to hear it. Sorry we lost our local, major local station here and Sirius XM radio. But I wondered if you had seen an article yesterday. We had an article in the Seattle Times from Associated Press that a study of the BP spill damaged the seafloor life for miles and is expected to take far longer to clear up than anybody had thought. And BP, of course, poo-pooed it, and I didn't hear anything on the national news that has lots of ads from BP telling us how wonderful they are and how lovely it is in the Gulf.
How they're so committed to helping and cleaning and healing and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, I did see the article yesterday, and you're absolutely right. The research every day, new research is coming out about how much damage the BP, that Mercando well spill, has done, and how long it's going to be before it cleans up, and in particular how much worse the damage was made because they sprayed all that dispersant over it. And
well, they knew that was the worst kind of dispersant to use there. It didn't work on that kind of stuff, and yet they used it because
because they wanted to hide the oil. They wanted the oil to settle, and it's doing it, and it's ruining the environment. It's continuing to. Portia, thank you for calling and sharing that with us. Carol in Howe, Oklahoma. Hey, Carol. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Thank you. You said that the Senate stripped out the portion of defunding Obamacare and sent it back to the House.
Yes. They also took out the Monsanto Protection Act.
Did they also strip out the Canadian pipeline?
I don't know. I would be astounded if they did not. My understanding is that what Harry Reid sent back was what he called a clean bill, which means all it does is it says that the federal government continues to operate until, I think, December 15th on the same budget it has been operating on. So nothing added, nothing taken away.
Well, I hope so.
You're welcome. Thank you, Carol, for the call. Eric in Moscow, Idaho. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. It's a pleasure. I originally wanted to speak with Senator Sanders, but I suppose you can address this as well. acknowledging the fact that all three parts of our government system have approved of the Affordable Care Act, the judiciary, the executive, and originally Congress.
Both houses of Congress, yes.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This, I mean, hostage-taking sells this short. My question for Senator Sanders was, hypothetically, if we ever do get the House of Representatives back under progressive control, would he be willing to pursue an amendment, legislation that keeps this from happening in the future? Because as President Obama said earlier in his speech today, that this precedent cannot be set. This is not a precedent that can be set across this country and
right.
continued. And I think some sort of political action by Congress or even going so far as an amendment to stop this type of thing happening in the future is necessary. And I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts. About
I would that. Submit I to you, Eric, that yeah, I would submit to you that that already exists. First of all, let's differentiate. There are two hostage-taking situations going on right now, and the Republicans are trying to figure out where they're going to put their focus. And this is going to be the debate over the weekend in the Republican caucus. They've got the fund of the government for, you know, until December 15th, for the next quarter of the year. They've got that, and then they've got raised the debt ceiling. Okay, the debt ceiling is going to have to be raised before October 17th. Funding the government has to be done before October 1st, because that's the beginning of the fiscal year, the annual fiscal year. And if you don't appropriate money for things, then the Treasury Department does not have the authority to write checks. So these are two separate battles. And the first battle, the, you know, October 1st, fund the government for another quarter with a continuing resolution that just keeps everything, including the sequester, by the way, in place. I'm guessing the Republicans are going to back down on that, and they're going to fund the government, and then they're going to hold the government hostage over the debt ceiling, which is going to happen, has to happen before October 17th, because that's when we, you know, are going to have to raise that borrow more money to pay for the bills that are still coming in from George Bush's wars. And when that happens, I'm of the opinion, and Nancy Pelosi, by the way, said this yesterday or the day before. And I was so gratified to see the senior Democrat in the House of Representatives, or the I don't know if she's the senior most, but the she's not the Speaker of the House, but she would be if they had the majority. So whatever that's called, right?
Minority leader.
Minority leader. Thank you very much. You're right. So the minority leader in the House of Representatives saying that the 14th Amendment, which explicitly says that the full faith and credit of the United States shall not be questioned. Now, of course, it was written, you know, at a different time and for a different purpose. It was written to say that the Union is going to pay its war debts, and we're not necessarily going to pay the Confederacy's war debts. Or maybe it was
right.
that they are. I don't remember. It was one or the other. But it had to do with the Civil War. But it's still there. And it says the full faith and credit of the United States government shall not be questioned. In my opinion, that being in the Constitution makes this debt ceiling, which the Republicans put into law back during, I think, the Eisenhower administration. It might have been even before that. Makes that bill unconstitutional, that law unconstitutional. And I'm of the opinion that the president can simply say to the Republicans, buzz off, guys. I'm going to ignore you. I'm going to direct Jack Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, to borrow more money, you know, to go to the Fed and issue more treasuries and borrow more money and keep this government going. And you guys can, you know, hold your breath until your faces turn blue, but it ain't going to do any good. And the president, you know, 2 years ago when this happened, he said he wouldn't do the 14th Amendment route. He thought it should be resolved by Congress. They should be adult enough to do it. So far, not so much. So we'll see. But he's got that in his back pocket, and he knows he's got it in his back pocket. And I hope he uses it. Eric, thanks for the call. Wayne in Chicago. Got a minute to the break. Wayne, what's up? Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Yes, Tom. Regarding that call about the guy who was calling the Republicans traitors, you know, you don't have to be a foreign enemy of the state to be a traitor. They're traitors from within also. But what I wanted to ask you is...
I would call them anti-American. I mean...
Okay.
Go ahead, Wayne.
How long has your show, The Big Picture, been on that RT network?
2 years.
Wow. You know, I just found out about it. It's really bad. I just found out about it the other day.
Huh?
I've been missing it all this time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a good show.
Yeah, well, thank you. We have, Louise and I own that show. We produce it ourselves. It's independently owned and produced. We syndicate it both to RT and to Free Speech TV. It's on both television networks. RT carries it in 104 countries into 600 million homes around the world. And Free Speech TV carries it into, I think, 40, 50, 60 million homes in the United States. So it's a TV show every night at 7 o'clock, and we have a lot of fun doing it. Thanks for the plug, Wayne. Appreciate the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And at TomHartman.com, you can drop into our live free chat room and hang out with some of the finest minds in the world. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria Jones on the line with us, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org, by the way, to pardon Don Siegelman. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, President Obama made news within the last 90 minutes and said some very interesting things in the Brady Press briefing room. First one of which was that he had spoken very recently today with Iranian new president Hassan Rouhani, and by phone today, the highest level contact between the two countries since the Iranian Revolution in 1979, and seemingly a sign that both sides are serious about reaching a deal on Iran's nuclear program, which they talked about.
Wow.
He said, I reiterated to President Rouhani what I said in New York, not to him. While there will surely be important obstacles to moving forward and success is by no means guaranteed, I believe we can reach a comprehensive solution. He also said Iran's supreme leader has issued a fatwa against the development of nuclear weapons. President Rouhani has indicated that Iran will never develop nuclear weapons. Now, Obama didn't say he believes him. He just said that. He said, I've made clear that we respect the right of the Iranian people to access peaceful nuclear energy in the context of Iran meeting its obligations. So the test will be meaningful, transparent, and verifiable actions, which can also bring relief from the comprehensive international sanctions that are currently in place.
Wow. That is extraordinary because, you know, bringing Iran into the fold, Iran is a major power, a major modern, large nation in the middle of the Middle East, and having them as an ally even would be mind-boggling.
It really would. Rouhani apparently then tweeted, and it is Rouhani's Twitter feed, that in his phone conversation, he told Obama, have a nice day, and Obama responded, thank you, Hodafez.
Thank you what?
Hodafez, that's goodbye.
Oh, Hodafez. In other words, he spoke in Persian.
Yes.
In Farsi.
Yes.
Oh, that's which is a way of showing respect, which is in Persian culture, in Iranian culture, a big deal.
Yes.
Being respectful to people is, I mean, there's like nothing higher. That's
interesting. And also, I think, very interesting, and this seems to be a Reuters story, but I've only seen it reported in one place, so I'll mention it with that caveat, that I've only seen it reported in one place, which is there seems to have been a 30-minute private meeting yesterday between Secretary of State John Kerry and Javad Zarif, the foreign minister of Iran, after the meeting of all the foreign ministers. John Kerry, at the end of the meeting, seized the opportunity, said, shall we talk for a few moments? They went into a room at the side of the main hall without aides and apparently met for 30 minutes. And I think it's interesting that they met for 30 minutes and then the next day their bosses talk.
Yeah, it looks like there's a line of causality there.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
So what else is up?
Well, President Obama, again, spoke, and this time, after he talked about Iran, spoke briefly about the Syria vote in the UN Security Council later tonight, about the draft resolution. Then he spoke about the budget
spoke about the government possible shutdown and about the debt ceiling.
Now, Victoria, we have received this message. I don't know if you've seen this. It's in the media. But here's the message that has been put out, just the first 10 seconds of it. It runs actually a full minute, but here's the first 10 seconds of it.
American people, this is the GOP. We have your economy. If you ever want your economy back, do exactly as we say.
And then they go through and they list their demands, you know, like, you know, tax cuts on the rich, raise taxes on the working class, do the Keystone Pipeline, stop Obamacare, et cetera. What do you think?
President Obama had a response.
Mm-hmm.
Knock it off.
Aha. Okay. He literally that phrase? Knock it off?
Yes, he used that phrase.
Wow, that's a very kind of from his grandfather, World War II kind of phrase. That's how my dad used to talk.
Yeah, he said knock it off. He said a number of things, actually, but he did say knock it off. He urged the Republicans to think about who they would be hurting. You know, he said to the Republicans, you have staff members who are not earning very much money, and they're not going to get paid on time.
Yeah, that's remarkable. That is absolutely remarkable. Do you think that there's any chance that the president will pull the 14th Amendment? I realize not on this case, but the next one is going to be the debt ceiling. Nancy Pelosi has encouraged him to. Do you think that's going to happen?
No. I've been in the briefing room when Jay Carney has specifically and really plainly said that they do not believe that the 14th Amendment applies.
Yeah, okay. Well,
just don't
all right.
think it'll happen.
So what else is up?
Just to probably raise your blood pressure. Sorry, but it's Friday, and so I thought you'd enjoy this one.
Okay.
House Republicans Thursday, Representative Steve Stockman of Texas specifically, proposed a Safe Military Bases Act that would end the so-called ban on carrying firearms on military bases in response to the shooting spree at the Navy Yard that left 13 dead, including the shooter, saying our disarmed military bases are vulnerable targets for terrorists, as we saw in Fort Hood and the Navy Yard. Despite that, soldiers trained to use guns cannot carry on base.
So these guys won't be happy until every person in America is walking around with a .45 strapped to their hip or an AR-15 over their shoulder.
Basically, I think that's true. One of his co-sponsors was Louis Gohmert.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Okay. All right. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Victoria, thank you for the news report today.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. We'll be back with Kwame Nehdu, the executive director, international executive director of Greenpeace. They've got some amazing stuff going. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with me, I am incredibly honored to have Kwame Nehdu, the International Executive Director of Greenpeace. Kwame, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom. Good to be back.
It is so good to have you with us. Greenpeace is always doing all kinds of stuff all over the world, but there's a couple of things at the top of your agenda, I'm guessing. Where do you want to start in this conversation?
Perhaps we should talk about the recent arrests of 30 Greenpeace activists who are now in prison.
In Russia.
In Russia,
yeah.
As we speak. This is related to our campaign to discourage oil and gas companies from going to drill in the Arctic. The only reason even the possibility of drilling in the Arctic is there is because of burning fossil fuels in the first place.
Right.
And in the summer months now, in the Arctic, the ocean comes alive, meaning that the ice is disappearing. And last year, we reached the lowest minimum level of ice in the Arctic. Now, people might think, well, what's the big deal about that? The Arctic sea ice serves as a refrigerator or air conditioner for the planet. It regulates global temperature. It reflects you know, quite a lot of the sun's rays back into the atmosphere. So the taking away of the Arctic sea ice in the summer months is already beginning to have an impact on climate and will continue to do so. So the first company that is about to start actual drilling in the Arctic is a Russian state company called Gazprom. Now, there are several other companies that are prospecting. Shell is prospecting in the American Alaskan Arctic. A British company, Kern, was in Greenland. We waged a campaign against them. I spent 5 days in prison as a result of occupying that rig. Wow. Many of my other colleagues, this was in 2012, many of my other colleagues spent even longer time. But I'm happy to say that Cairn Energy is out of the Arctic. So, but the first company that is threatening anyway to move beyond exploration and actually start drilling is Gazprom. So last year we did an action. I participated in it as well. We were there for 7 days. We managed to stop the production, and then they suspended operations last year because it was getting close to the winter months. And this time round, we did exactly the same action, but this time we had heavy state response. Our activists who were up in, who were trying to get up the rig on the outside of the rig, because we don't get into the rig.
Sure.
We get out of the rig with our messages.
So you're out on the outside of the oil rigs holding up a banner.
Yes, but it's quite a tricky thing because you've got to sort of find the sturdy thing that you can get a rope on and then quickly climb up. This time, as two of our colleagues were going up, they were literally kind of jerked down. You can see the footage of them screaming to the, because it's extremely dangerous. You fall normally in that water and you're dead in like 3 minutes because the
hypothermia.
But our colleagues have, you know, protective gear, but that protects you for like, you know, 2 hours max. So this time around, they fired about 11 shots at the colleagues on the inflatable boats. They terrorized the people who were up there, knocking their body against the concrete. And anyway, they eventually came down and they were arrested, two of them. And then the rest of the people were then on the our ship, the Arctic Sunrise.
Right.
And then helicopters were suddenly above us, and commandos dropped onto the ship with guns, knives, terrified our crew, got them under gunpoint to lay on the deck of the ship, and then said to our captain, who's an American called Pete Wilcox. Interestingly, Pete Wilcox was also the captain on the Rainbow Warrior that was bombed by the French Secret Service 27 years ago.
Whoa.
In Auckland, New Zealand, when that ship was about to try to stop the French from nuclear testing.
Right.
So Pete, knowing international law, said, listen, we are in international waters. The ship was outside of the exclusion zone around the rig, and said, what you've done, you have no basis to occupy the rig, and for that reason, I'm not going to give you cooperation. I'm not going to, because they said you need to get the ship moving and to follow them to Murmansk, which is a nearest city, which is like 3 hours away.
Right.
And so they towed the boat for 3 days. Our activists arrived 2 days ago in port. Yesterday they were taken to court. And incredibly, they've been charged with piracy. They've not been charged with piracy. They've been, the courts ordered them to be locked up for 2 months in what is euphemistically called pre-trial detention. During my anti-apartheid struggle days, we used to simply call that detention without trial.
Right.
Pre-trial detention is a euphemism.
Yeah.
And during which time they will investigate, you know, piracy charges. Now, you know, piracy is more than one ship. Pirates generally have weapons. We don't have a single weapon on us. And piracy is also for personal gain, right? None of these conditions actually prevail. And actually, President Putin, speaking 2 days ago at the Arctic Council meeting, which was actually happening in a Russian Arctic town, did actually say, you know, of course, Greenpeace is not pirates. But we thought that this was just speculation. And were staggered yesterday when they pursued the piracy charge.
Well, never underestimate the power of a giant oil company, even if it's largely or partially state-owned. What can people do?
Well,
it'll be ongoing to greenpeace.org and educating themselves and, you know, kicking in a little help.
Okay. I mean, I think firstly the American people must realize that there's an American hero involved here, Pete Wilcox.
He's one of the people arrested.
Yeah, he's the captain of the ship. He has been doing environmental justice work for 30 years, and he's an outstanding human being. I've met him several times. Humble, quiet, cool, calm, and collected, and maximum solidarity should be offered to him. So what I would say is right now, people listening to the program should be writing to their local representatives and their representatives,
their members of Congress,
saying there's an American citizen together with, you know, 29 other people being held under these conditions, and to call on the U.S. government to get actively involved in speaking out publicly on the situation. Now, our ship sails under Dutch flag, and the Dutch government has been very good, and the Dutch government has been already been in touch with the Russian authorities asking for the release of the ship and the activists. We would like to see the U.S. government consider likewise. More than that, I mean, I think we don't want, and I'm sure our 30 activists wouldn't want the focus to be just on them.
Right.
They would want people to focus on the issue for which they put their lives on the line.
Sure.
And the issue is that we are running out of time to avert catastrophic climate change.
Absolutely.
And I think what I would say about U.S. politicians right now and the U.S. business leadership in the main, even though there are exceptions, is that they're suffering from a really bad case of denial.
Hmm.
You know, all the facts are there. I mean, if you look at the United States alone, the drought that impacted on more than 13 states last year, is one indication. The intensity, ferocity, and power of Hurricane Sandy. Of course, hurricanes always happen.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are seeing is that the intensity of the storms and so on.
Oh, these mile-wide tornadoes across the Midwest.
Exactly. And, you know, Colorado, first time we're seeing flooding like that in
more than
1,000 years.
Yeah.
So I think the writing, you know, there are two things laying it out very clear. On the one hand, global scientific consensus is clear that we are running out of time. And on the other hand, Mother Nature itself is speaking very eloquently and powerfully through extreme weather events. In the last 10 years, I was having a meeting with what we see is 10% increase in storms.
Amazing.
So the writing is on the wall.
Kumine Du, greenpeace.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Get over to greenpeace.org, and you can read the whole story, get all the information, find out what you can do, and contact your member of Congress, Kumine Du, the International Executive Director of Greenpeace. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just a quick special guest here, Michael Elliott, who is the president and CEO of the One, O-N-E, campaign, as in one.org. Previously was the editor of Time Magazine International Edition, deputy managing editor of Time Magazine prior to One, also a columnist on the global economy for Fortune Magazine. And Michael, and welcome to the program, first of all.
I'm delighted to be with you.
It's great to have you with us. Tell us about One. Is this the program that Bono or...
Exactly.
Okay.
So this is the campaigning organization that Bono was a co-founder of. So we're an advocacy and campaigning body that that works with governments around the world to make sure that resources continue to flow to fight extreme poverty and preventable disease, particularly in Africa. So we lobby in the U.S. and the U.K., all over Europe and elsewhere. We make sure that money continues to go to fight poverty, to fight AIDS, TB, malaria. And we're backed up by an army of 4 million people around the world who sign letters, sign petitions, call their congressman, what have you.
Who go to one.org and find out what you're up to. AIDS, HIV, tuberculosis, malaria, these conditions don't exist in a vacuum. I've spent a fair amount of time in the third world. I've done international relief work for 38 years. And there does seem to be a fairly, at least in my mind, a fairly clear association between poverty and these things. and not just individual poverty, national poverty as well, the lack of infrastructure, the lack of healthcare infrastructure, the lack of sanitary infrastructure, things like that. What in your, first of all, would you agree or disagree with that comment? And secondly, in either case, what are the solutions in your mind?
Oh, I 100% agree with what you've just said. And I think one of the key solutions is to recognize that many of the parts of the world that look as if they're really poor are sitting on top of resources that could make them very, very rich. You've got some of the poorest people in the world sitting on top of oil, gas, mineral resources, what have you. And if those resources could just be freed up and used for the benefit of people so that they built schools and hospitals and roads rather than be kind of siphoned away into the pockets of corrupt officials, everyone would be better off. And that was one of the things, one of the key things that Bono was talking about when he was here in New York, where I'm talking to.
But do we really, you know, given the reality of climate change, if we're talking to a, for example, a lot of the work that I've done recently has been in northern South Sudan, around the Darfur area, Gok Machar. We actually did our show for a week from this little town of 7,000 people that's now 47,000 people because of Darfurian refugees. And they're finding oil along the northern border of South Sudan. And so North Sudan, or Sudan, Mr. Bashir's government, the war criminal, has been moving his border south. He's been bringing his soldiers in.
Sure.
The Chinese are buying up these oil lots. The Norwegians are helping them meter this stuff. And the Dinka people are, by and large, caught in the middle, and they're being slaughtered. And wouldn't it be, rather than helping with the development of oil, which is what the Chinese and the Norwegians would say that they're doing, wouldn't it be better to be going in and leapfrogging over this 19th century energy source and do, as I know a number of good NGOs are doing very aggressively, and I've seen personally in India, for example, in rural India, going in and solarizing villages that have never had electricity before, go directly from no electricity to solar, solar panels for the community, and pumps, wells in Gok Machar. They have one pump, one well. This is kind of high desert land, and the women run this thing 24/7. It's got a hand crank on it. If they simply had a good solar panel and a pump on that thing, people they get a heck of a lot more water out of it, if nothing else. What are your thoughts on that?
About eight different separate thoughts. I mean, first of all, you're absolutely right. You're 100% right that somewhere like Africa, but the developing world generally, definitely needs to develop its renewable resources, which have barely been scratched in many places, so that energy can be provided as clean as possible. If we're going to power Africa, something that we're completely committed to at the One Dot, at the One campaign, then we have to do it in a better way than we powered Western Europe and North America, and that means doing it as cleanly as possible. Now, in some parts of the developing world, that won't be possible solely by renewables, and we can't wait for renewable technology to come online. And don't forget, what we're looking for here when we talk about power in Africa is not just kind of a few lights. You know, what we're looking for is an economic transformation. People need jobs. People need jobs, and that means they need factories, they need places where people can work. But you're entirely right that the whole renewable field needs to be kind of massively developed.
Well, and the other problem with oil is what we saw in Nigeria, for example. Widespread corruption, huge environmental devastation.
So the question is, what can one do to address that?
Yes.
And that's really, that's really where the rubber meets the road. And that's what Bono was talking about when he was here in New York yesterday. The way to tackle corruption is transparency. There's a vaccine for corruption, and it's transparency. And it's making sure that the oil, gas, and extractive companies publish exactly what they pay for the right to take out extractive, so that civil society organizers, you know them, I know them, in the developing world can see that data, follow the money, and hold people to account.
Why not call for nationalization like Norway and Venezuela have done?
For making sure that it's spent in the right way. And the kind of great tragedy of the transparency revolution right now is that the U.S. was in the lead on this a couple of years ago with tremendous legislation that we played a key role in getting passed, the Cardin-Lugar amendment, and that legislation is now stalled because the American Petroleum Institute brought a lawsuit against the SEC, and the SEC has had to go back and rewrite the rules. So Bono was essentially saying yesterday, look, there's a transparency revolution going on that makes sure that money is going to be spent so that it really benefits people. Everyone needs to get on the same side and kind of make sure that it really happens.
But see, even you know, the Saudi sheikhs are not going to be in favor of that any more than the corrupt Nigerian local warlords.
Well, the question is, let's start with making sure this legislation is already in place in Western Europe, okay? Mm-hmm. So any company that is quoted on a European stock exchange has to publish what it pays. That legislation is present in the U.S. The SEC made rules, and a lawsuit delayed the rules.
So in other words, like BP and Shell, which are European-based companies, they have to comply with this. ExxonMobil doesn't.
We have to create a global standard on this, and we can do so. And you know what? We can get the Saudi sheikhs on site.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. Thank you very much. Michael Elliott, President and CEO of the One Campaign One. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, 28 minutes before the hour. And my apologies for throwing a couple of minutes of pre-recorded content at you. Kumi Naidoo was here in the studio, and we had a little scheme hatching that we wanted to do, a little private conversation, and but anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday. We'll get back. I'm back here live, and we'll pick up your phone calls. Joanne in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Great to be on your show.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
I've got so much to talk to you about, but you were the inspiration for me, so I have to give you credit right up front. And I hear people calling into your show all the time saying, what can I do? And I used to think like that, too.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know what to do. And I started listening to you, and I remember you talking about drinking liberally. So I started going there.
Uh-huh.
And I started meeting some very smart people.
Yeah, the Drinking Liberally group is great. I haven't talked about them in a while. It's our producer that we used to have here was very active with them, so I was constantly at the top of my mind. I've got to get back to.
Well, that was just my start, Tom. That was you know, learning about everything. Besides learning from you, but talking to all these people, you know, I still got a passion to do something and get something done. So what I thought about is, you know, I'm only one person, and what can I do? So I figured I'd pick an issue, and I decided to start with gun violence prevention. And back in April, I started having vigils here in my local town of Clifton. And we got in the street, and we held up the names of all the kids and the adults that died in Sandy Hook. And we started remembering them, and we did it. And we did it every month on the anniversary of the shooting. And then I got involved with Organizing for Action. Oh, terrific organization. I'm going to give them a really big plug here. Anybody who wants to get involved, look for your Organizing for Action chapter locally, because they're tremendous. So they started supporting me in my events, and then we took it to the next level, and I started in August a petition drive. But this petition drive is a little bit different than anybody else has ever done before. My petitions are 25 feet long.
Oh,
and we started it in August, and I've got two full ones already. We're on our third, and we've printed four more, and they're going around the state of New Jersey. I'm going to have it in Paterson, New Jersey tomorrow. I'm going to have it in Morristown, New Jersey on Sunday at their street fair. They're going to be all over the place. And then we're going to take them to Congress, because nobody's been able to make any headway yet. We figured if we unveil, you know, a quarter mile of petitions, maybe in front of Congress, maybe they'll do something.
That's extraordinary, Joanne.
So that's what we're doing here in Clifton, and now I'm working with OFA, and they've just expanded my area from Clifton to Passaic County, Bergen County, and Hudson County, and I have a Facebook page called OFA Clifton Team, if anybody's out there listening.
Okay, tell me what that is again, the Facebook.
OFA Clifton Team.
OFA Clifton Team, T-E-A-M.
Correct.
Cool. And that's on Facebook.
And I'm starting with the gun violence, but Monday we're going to start working on the Affordable Care Act, and then we're going to do some stuff on climate change and immigration, and we're going strong here in Jersey, and I really want other people to join us. I've got really huge events planned for November and December, and I really need some help. I want some other people to join with me, and this is what you can do when you don't know what to do.
That is absolutely spectacular. And Joanne Danielle just suggested that you should be our recipient of a Tom Harbin book today. So
how wonderful!
Whatever you'd like, I'm going to put you on hold. You've told us the story, right? I can put you on hold now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Let me put you on hold, and Dylan is going to get your address and everything. And OFA, as in Organizing for Action, Clifton, as in Clifton, New Jersey, team, OFA Clifton team on Facebook. Right, Joanne?
Yes, yeah. That's
okay,
it.
Okay, great. Okay, hang on just a minute. Dylan will get your address, and I'll autograph a book and send it off to you. You can tell him which one you'd like. We've got, you know, Rebooting the American Dream, Unequal Protection, Cracking the Code. Got a bunch of them kicking around here. So thank you, Joanne. Ray in Atascadero, California. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi. I was calling about mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a, I think he was a psychiatrist on the other day, and you were discussing meds not being necessary for those with mental illnesses.
Well, Peter Bregan was suggesting that
right.
Sometimes he thinks the medications are worse than the not medication. I'm not quite all the way there, but anyway, back to you, Ray.
Well, medications for the mentally ill, and I have severe depression, and if I didn't take antidepressants, I'd be in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would commit suicide. And by saying that meds are not necessary, it encourages those who need them to go off.
I agree.
Especially with schizophrenia.
Yeah, I agree.
And really what you need for mental illnesses, like I have a son with schizophrenia, which he needs. Mm. You need meds, you need therapy, and you need housing.
Right. Yeah, and I have a nephew with schizophrenia. I know exactly what you're talking about. And
so, and when my son goes off his meds, which is common with people with schizophrenia, then he gets in trouble.
Yep.
And he gets in jail, and he can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So, but we're not treating our mentally ill.
Yeah, you're right. And I think Peter Bregan's, you know, he's very anti-medication. As I said, I'm not. Although I do think that we turn to medication too quickly and too easily because it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it makes it so much easier if you can just medicate people, particularly medicating people into docility, if you can just medicate them rather than actually dealing with their life situations, their crises. As you point out, housing, for example, is a big one. I would say it goes even beyond that, you know, that they need meaningful things to do with their lives, you know, that they need work environments or some, you know, things that they can engage themselves with. They need community. People need good mental health care. It's one of the wonderful things about Obamacare is that it requires insurance companies to include mental health services. A lot of people have health insurance right now, and it doesn't cover mental health services, which is crazy. That's a terrible use of the word, pardon me. But you get my point. So, Ray, thank you for calling it. The excellent point you made, and I appreciate it. Thank you. Doug in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Doug. It says, the first time I've ever disagreed with Tom. What's this?
The first time. Can I throw something in for your Science Friday or Thursdays, though?
Sure.
It's kind of metaphysical. You'll like this. The scientists were looking, this was in Scientific America probably last year, whether or not the future influences the present. So they hooked up a little nanowire, and they found that the wire would actually start vibrating before they sent the electrical current through it.
Hmm.
This was in Scientific American. You can look it up.
Wow.
What I disagreed with you on, though, is the fact that you said that the Sunday morning shows don't have Republicans on, or don't criticize Republicans because they want to have them on there. I think that they're in the bag with the Republican Party. They've been completely captured. You have GE running NBC, and that what they actually, whether or not you had, if your program was on the CBS, NBC, ABC, first off, it wouldn't get on there because it's like your radio stations. They've kicked Stephanie Miller off and, right. Well, Ed Schultz, all of them.
Yeah.
That they would still bring them on there. Just so that they could use the same trope and continue their disingenuous.
Yeah, the reason that they wouldn't have me on, though, is that I talk back to those people rather than just talking past them or letting them get their stuff out. Go ahead.
They've had Rachel Maddow on there, and she usually cleans her clocks.
Yes.
And while they have a limited amount of that, like when Wisconsin was going through getting rid of the unions,
mm-hmm.
you had it was in Media Matters, like 44 Republicans and one union representative. It was Richard Trumka.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that they do it to curry favor with the GOP. I think they're captured by the GOP, and they simply put somebody on who's a contrarian every so often to make it appear.
It may be, Doug. I don't hang out in those rarefied circles. I don't know the executives, the stockholders, the boards of directors, the people who are, you know, making programming decisions. I know some of the talent, but, you know, it's I just can't say. I do know, though, that access is a big deal. So, you may be right. Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Roger in Wakanda, Illinois. We got a minute to the break. Roger, it's yours.
All right. Well, I have just wanted to mention that our science goals, we get such good outlooks with our, you know, things that they're discovering, and pretty soon our children may be able to live to 120 years, and our ecology is not matching up with that. So if our scientists that have this good outlook, they're just going to have to make the other side, you know, get their act together also.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the Republican tactic is not so much as to win when they're trying to prevent us, you know, the government from, you know, when they're trying to shut it down. They're not trying to succeed in that. They're just trying to wear us down. It's like a bullying technique.
Yeah.
So that they keep on doing it.
I think bullying is probably the best metaphor for the way that the Republican Party has been behaving since basically the end of the Reagan administration, and arguably even the beginning. It was just bullying with a friendly face when Ronnie was doing it. But, I think that's a very good explanation. Roger, thank you for the call. 15 minutes before you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday, back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everybody at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dow Global on commercial radio, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network on cable systems across the country, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and the others around the country, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, all the folks in our chat room, hey, how are you? To Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and the great folks at Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our radio stations, television stations, our sponsors or our underwriters, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. It's genuinely appreciated, and particularly genuinely appreciated when you let one of our underwriters know that you're listening, or one of our stations or networks know that you're listening or watching the program and that you care about the program. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to share with you what I think are the two scariest words in the English language now, especially after watching you had a climate scientist on The Big Picture earlier and listening to the Greenpeace guy, but I think positive feedback.
Yep.
When I hear those two words together, it sends chills down my spine, because it just, the more and more we approach positive climate feedbacks, the more we've reached what I consider to be the tipping point where there just is no way to turn back. Because that's when the climate itself is adding more carbon, you know, to the carbon cycle, then, and it's just going to take off by itself. So I just wanted to get your thoughts.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And, in fact, I wrote a little 99-cent book on this that's available. It's an e-book. You know, it's available on Kindle and BNN and Apple iBooks or something. And we were going to – actually, we wanted to make it free, but publishers won't publish free books. We didn't have the technical ability. Didn't know how to do it, you know. So, but anyhow, so it's 99 cents. but it's called The Last Hours of Humanity, and it's about principally about methane, about how if we raise our carbon dioxide levels to the point where we start triggering the melting of the methane hydrate, the methane clathrate, the frozen methane in the tundra, particularly the Siberian tundra and the Alaskan tundra, and in the undersea levels. And this is what Kumine Du was talking about, what he got close to talking about when he was talking about the Arctic, that if that methane starts going in large quantities, there's over 2 trillion tons of that methane stashed in the Arctic, just in the Arctic, right? And if it goes, we've burned about 350 billion tons since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. If that methane goes, we're talking mass extinction. We're talking about mass extinctions on the level of the 5 great extinctions in the history of this world. And only this time, instead of being caused by a meteorite like it was with the KT extinction, or a massive volcanic eruption like it was with the Permian extinction, it'll have been caused by us burning fossil fuels. And that is insane. It's absolutely insane. And I'm going to be talking about that a whole lot more next week. So, Marty, I'm totally with you. Thank you for the comments, and thanks for listening to WCPT. Daryl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Daryl, reconfiguring the economy?
Well, it's basically what you were talking about earlier just before the last break. I mean, when I try to pull back and look at this with a wide-angle view, what I see is a handful of people like you allude to all the time basically co-opting the system. There has been a vast redistribution of wealth. It's just not in the direction everybody's been blathering on about. And when you chart this out in a calendar format, there's BR and AR, before Reagan and after Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a handful of people trying to roll this back to a high-tech, low-profile version of a planter aristocracy in the Old South, where all the wealth, all the power, and all access to either is located in the hands of the very few. And I think they've tapped into this white male fear of the coming demographic shift in America, and they've wrapped it up in the iconography of religion and patriotism. But only a handful of people did really, really well under that economic system, and that region of the country is still suffering the legacy of that today.
You're absolutely right, hundreds of years later. And in fact, that system in the South was just a replication of what Europe was doing 100 years before that, which was called feudalism.
Exactly.
This is a very old economic system.
Right, and we know who it benefits, and we know who it's built upon. And I mean, look around. We're all sharecroppers now.
Right.
I mean, it's a hand-to-mouth existence, and they've been able to do this by buying up all the media, taking it from 50-some-odd companies controlling the media in the 80s, roughly, to now 5, now that Bain Capital's bought out Clear Channel. They control the airways. They control what most people read and hear, and they've been able to pull this off with a whole lot of money and 20-30% of the population, To Cruz's point yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, Durbin was grilling him about where his health care came from. And look, Cruz is a bright guy, but he's also a narcissistic smart aleck. And he didn't want to go there. But as it turns out, his health care is through his wife, who is a big shot with Goldman Sachs. So, no, he's not real worried about
it. Wait a minute, Ted Cruz's wife is a big shot with Goldman Sachs?
Yes, sir. That was reported on Daily Cause yesterday.
I had no idea. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I didn't know. I'll have to fact check that myself, and I encourage everybody else to. But I have no reason not to believe that you're telling me the truth, Daryl. Amazing. So Ted Cruz is bragging about not taking his congressional free health care because he's getting it through his wife through Goldman Sachs. Is that the deal?
Yes, sir. And in 2009, as I understand it, the New York Times reported that package for that level of employee for a family was roughly $40,000 a year. So, yeah, he's okay, but I don't think he represents it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Daryl, thanks a lot for the call. Amazing. Coming up next week in the program, all the news and information you need from the weekend. Plus, get your questions ready. We'll have Obamacare expert Wendell Potter here to talk about what to expect when the exchanges go into effect on Tuesday. And remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, occupy something, tag your agenda. See you next week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.